Is the IRS going to censor sermons at your church? So asks Kelsey Harkness of the Heritage Foundation in an article recently. She writes, quote, an atheist group wants to censor what priests, pastors, rabbis, and other clergy say in their sermons by threatening the IRS to challenge their tax-exempt status. Generally, the leaders of houses of worship in America have the constitutional right to preach and promote anything short of an outright endorsement of a political candidate. But now that freedom is being challenged. End of quote from Kelsey. To discuss this with us today is an attorney and author also with the Heritage Foundation. His name is Hans von Spakovsky. For VocalPoint, this is Jerry Newcomb. And Hans, welcome to the program.
Jerry, thanks for having me on.
Sure. Now, that sounds very radical. I mean, it sounds like, this is Orwellian. This couldn't happen in America, could it?
Unfortunately, yes. Everyone who's been following the IRS targeting of conservative organizations and the disappearance of Lois Lerner's emails knows that, no, this is very possible. What's happened is an organization called the Freedom From Religion Foundation, an atheist group, sued the IRS saying that they were not enforcing IRS regulations that restrict the electioneering activities of 501c3s. 501c3s are, you know, charitable organizations, including churches.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, they dismissed the suit, saying that they were now satisfied that the IRS would be enforcing this provision.
You mean you're saying that the Freedom From the Foundation organization released or dropped their own suit because, hey, the IRS is going to do it after all?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, you know, part of what we don't really know here is that there was no settlement agreement filed in the court action. And I think a number of oversight committees in Congress are now going to be demanding from the IRS to know whether there was some kind of secret settlement agreement. But there was a letter filed that was from the IRS in which they said that they, at the current time, are examining 99 churches. The exact language they used was, they said, we have 99 churches that merit what they call a, quote, high priority examination.
And that's in reference to political content, potentially?
Yes, that's exactly right. And the problem here is that the IRS has a very restrictive view of what's allowed, one that goes far beyond what they are allowed to do under the law, and that frankly violates the First Amendment rights.
Yes.
Of churches. And everyone needs to understand, this whole regulation that the IRS is interpreting, this was something that was put in the late 1950s. Why? It was called the Johnson Amendment, as in after Lyndon B. Johnson,
mm-hmm.
who was mad about how some churches were frankly talking about candidates and the bad views they had on many different kinds of social issues, which is something American churches have been doing for our entire history.
Well, that's so true. I mean, if you took the church out of even, let's say, the civil rights movement, it wouldn't have happened.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yes.
You named the issue, just about.
Civil rights, but
yeah.
look, go back to
dueling, slavery.
Who was some of the most important people preaching against slavery before the American Civil War, the abolitionist movement? That was the churches in America.
Yeah, that's true. Two-thirds of the members of the Abolition Society in the 1830s were actual preachers of the gospel. So that's very scary. Now, obviously, issues like, let's say, abortion or same-sex marriage, these come to mind. Is this something where the IRS is going to take a stand in favor of let's say, same-sex marriage, and if you preach against it, You're in violation of IRS code somehow?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to come in and say, well, if you have if you invite candidates in to, for example, do a debate, let's say it's totally nonpartisan. You know, you simply say you want to have a forum, you want people to come in and debate these issues. The IRS may say, "Ooh, you're acting in a partisan manner. You can't do that." It's a way of
if you invite
church members from being informed.
If you invite both sides, even if only one side shows up, you're still doing your due diligence to be nonpartisan.
No, that's exactly right, but that is not necessarily the way the IRS will look at it.
Well, that's
a very
wrong.
Dangerous thing, I'll tell you.
That is a dangerous thing. Now, have there been any specific challenges on this, or it's more like a threat that's out there and people on both sides of the issue are waiting to see, you know, an actual case arise?
Well, look, the IRS says that they have 99 churches that merit high valuation. That means that they've got 99 churches that they are targeting for potential audits on this. We don't know who those churches are. We don't know where they're located because that information isn't given in the letter. Hopefully what will happen as part of this oversight by Congress is, one, they'll find out exactly what the details were of the settlement, but two, they'll find out, well, who is it that the IRS is targeting so that we can see if what's really going on here is something that violates their First Amendment rights and their ability to practice their religion freely, which is what this country was founded on.
Yeah. And even long before this country became an entity, let's take an example. The founder of this radio station, the late Dr. D. James Kennedy, once said years ago, he said, "I get accused sometimes of preaching politics." He said, "I do not. I certainly don't preach partisan politics." But let's take the example of abortion. The Church of Jesus Christ, from the very beginning of the Church, in Rome and through all the, you know, through the Middle Ages, etc., has always been pro-life, has been opposed to abortion, has been providing serious and real alternatives to abortion, and that's true in present-day America. Now, if you preach against abortion today, just because it's become politicized in the last generation or two, that doesn't mean you're preaching politics. You're still preaching, you know, what the Bible says in Psalm 139 and other places against abortion. Hello, you know. In other words, it's a moral issue, not a political one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But look, here's something that we should all understand very well these days is, look, the federal government today is more powerful exponentially than it has ever been.
Yes.
And there is not a single social issue that you can talk about without you having to talk about the government and who's running it, because the government has so much control over all of these issues.
Boy, you know, I've read a lot of the founding fathers. You could just read their philosophy, for example, in the Federalist Papers. They would never have agreed to this kind of leviathan of the federal government as exists today in America.
Oh no. And listen, we fought a revolution against the English monarchy. The English monarchy didn't have close to the level of power that the U.S. government has today.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to quote from Kelly Harkness's article. It's actually in reference to the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. That's somebody that they asked about this whole thing, and they said this, quote, "The IRS has implicitly recognized that it can't punish houses of worship for a minister's sermon to the congregation, but it constantly threatens enforcement without ever following through." So in other words, a lot of ministers there, you know, throughout the hinterland, maybe they look over their shoulders and think, well, you know, should I preach this or should I not? Well, the text demands it. Yeah, but what if the IRS gets me in trouble? I think I'll play it safe.
Yes, no, the Beckett Fund is exactly right. This is a way of chilling speech, because the vast majority of churches, they don't have the resources to fight the federal government, and particularly not the IRS.
Well, you know, it's funny. When you think about the First Amendment, and you mentioned the First Amendment earlier, the first right listed, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Those are the religion clauses, so freedom of religion is first. Then later it talks about freedom of speech. So twice in the First Amendment, you would have reason to believe that ministers should be able to preach from the pulpit, maybe even endorse a candidate. I'm not saying that they should, or I'm not saying that that's wise, but, you know, if there's free speech rights, well, let me ask you that. Let me just throw that out on the table.
Oh no! I think this rule is a basic violation of the First Amendment. But what everyone needs to understand is that this administration really does not believe in religious freedom. Don't forget, just 2 years ago, remember, 9 justices of the U.S. Supreme Court voted against the nutty position the administration was taking in a case called Hosanna-Tabor, in which, you know, the government was arguing that they had a right to say what the qualifications were of ministers being hired by churches. And the U.S. Supreme Court threw out that claim. But that shows how far the administration believes government power extends, even into our religious rights.
You know, that's an interesting thing, because that would mean that Ruth Ginsburg obviously voted with the majority in that particular case. I don't know if Elena Kagan was on the court at the time. Was Elena Kagan the ninth? She was.
Yeah, she was.
As liberal as they are, they were like, hey, no, you're wrong on this one.
Yeah, even for these very liberal justices, the position being taken by the Obama administration was too extreme, and that is quite a statement.
You know, I wonder if there's a collision course coming in the future when it comes to religious freedom and the pulpits in particular. Because, for example, the Alliance Defending Freedom, which I'm sure you're familiar with that organization,
oh, yeah.
The ADF. Okay. D. James Kennedy, by the way, again, ultimately founder of this radio station, was one of the key founders of that organization with Dr. Dobson and Bill Bright and others. Anyway, they encourage ministers at a certain Sunday, I believe this particular year is going to be October 3, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, they call it Pulpit Freedom Sunday. They want ministers to preach and preach boldly and maybe even have the tape sent to the IRS, kind of almost in your face. So there's a collision course coming, I think, in terms of pulpit freedom here.
Yeah, no, it is. But that is a terrific idea, because there is strength in numbers. And if churches throughout the country participate in this, you know, it makes it a little bit harder for the IRS to do the kind of attacks we fear that they will do.
Sure. Now, Matt Staver, who was just on a segment just moments ago before this taping is airing, and he had said in a different context, not in today's particular interview, but he has noted that no church has actually lost its IRS status except one week the paper from the IRS was rescinded for one particular church when they took out a full-page ad against Clinton when he was running in 1992. I think they said something like, to vote for Bill Clinton is a sin against Holy God, you know, something like that. Full page ad. And anyway, they didn't even that church didn't lose its IRS status or its tax exempt status despite being found guilty in that particular case. So for the vast majority of its history, no church has really lost despite this ongoing threat.
Yeah, but we don't know how many ministers, as you have said, have tempered what they wanted to say
because
they were afraid of the IRS.
Oh, I'm convinced of that.
That is a huge effect.
Yeah, I agree. I think self-censorship is a bigger problem here than any other issue.
Right.
And I would add to it, by the way, that a minister of the gospel, and this would include, you know, whatever your particular faith tradition, should be beholden to their calling. In other words, like a Christian minister should be, you know, bound to speak what God says. And, you know, we know historically sometimes, you know, they can get you in trouble, like the example of Thomas More, you know, falling afoul of Henry VIII, or even Becket, the Becket Fund. You know, Mr. Becket, for whom they named that organization, lost his head from one of the kings of England. I forget which one.
Look, the parable there is very, very good, because, look, the reason the IRS started going after conservative organizations is because the president was out there giving speech after speech after speech condemning conservative organizations. He might as well have said, will someone not rid me of these conservative advocacy organizations?
Wow. You know, and it's so interesting, too, because if you look at the other side of it, look how, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., where was the civil rights movement born? It was born at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, you know, in the basement after Rosa Parks was arrested for not giving up her seat. And it's just amazing. And you take the churches out of these different equations, both on the left side and the right side, and we'd have a very different society, much worse, actually.
We would be a much poorer place.
All right, heritage.org for more information?
Yes, heritage.org.
Okay, thank you so much again, Hans von Spakovsky, an attorney and author with Heritage Foundation. Thanks so much for being with us, sir.
Okay,
bye-bye. All the best. Bye-bye.